And the court will proceed to Monaghan versus the superintendent. Mr. Wright Bushman.
Your Honors, and may it please the Court, my name is Brian Wright Bushman. I'm a recent graduate of the University of Notre Dame, and I'm supervised by Attorney Robert Palmer. Together we've been appointed by this Court to represent the appellant in this case, Joseph Monaghan III. As this Court may know, there's been a recent development in the case. Just this last Friday, the State Superior Court entered a judgment in the state collateral case for Mr. Monaghan. So this presents an additional question to this court, namely whether the state case, the state ruling, has rendered this case moot. We argue that this case has not been rendered moot because Mr. Monaghan still has a legally cognizable interest in the outcome of this case. But in the alternative, if this court finds that it is moot, we argue that this case falls within one of the exceptions to the mootness doctrine. In either case, we ask this court to find that Mr. Monaghan should be excused from exhausting the requirement to exhaust state remedies, and also to remand this case to the district court for an evidentiary hearing on the merits of his Sixth Amendment claim. I'll begin with the argument that this case is not moot. A case is moot when it no longer presents a case or controversy to the court. In other words, when the parties no longer have a legally cognizable interest in the outcome of the case.
How much time is left on his probation?
We're not sure at this point. We haven't been able to contact him. We only heard about the hearing or about the state case yesterday, and we haven't been able to get in touch with him.
He's out on probation now?
Yes, he's out on probation.
How long was his confinement?
I believe it was – I would need to check the briefs.
Did he get out early?
I believe he did get out early, yes, and then he was on probation.
What was his original sentence?
I believe it was – I think it was 10 years, but I would have to check.
10 years?
Yes.
Did he get out in 5 or 6?
I'm honestly not sure. I would need to check.
And I don't know the law, but it's he gets out with good time. Is the balance of that usually probation? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know the answer to that either. Regardless of the fact that he has now received a hearing in his state court case, he still has an interest in a timely and effective remedy, namely a timely process for the adjudication of his claim. Because there's been delay in the lower court, the state trial court, he still would now have to go through the appellate process in the state court before being able to transfer to the federal district court if this court finds that he needs to exhaust his state remedies. However, if he does not need to exhaust his state remedies and can transition directly to the federal district court, then he will be afforded a more timely and effective remedy for addressing the constitutional claim which he is entitled to. Therefore, we argue that this case is not moot and that the issue before the court is whether he has experienced excessive delay. Now, there's excessive delay when the delay has been both inordinate and unjustifiable. This court held in Dozie v. Caddy that a delay of 17 months justifies or requires a further hearing into whether that delay has been justifiable. Now, in this case, Mr. Monaghan filed his state court claim in April of 2010, so the case has now been ongoing except that it stopped last Friday. Until then, it had been going on for over 4 years. There had been a period of complete absence of any action by the court for over 2 years. This is obviously well in excess of the 17-month delay in Caddy. Furthermore, this delay is unjustifiable because it has been solely the fault of the state. During the trial process, Monaghan did amend his complaint a few times. Those amendments as stated in the state court record from the case that just came down, were simply reiterations and restatements of the claims he had already made in his original petition, so they added nothing new. And, in fact, the state was able to respond to those claims within a matter of days. I believe it was about a month for the first one, and then for the second one and the third one, they responded within 2 or 3 days. That did not delay the process at all. Mr. Monaghan did make other motions. Those motions were aimed solely at moving his case along. He entered motions for Precy to withdraw, to change to a new judge, which were denied. He also entered motions to set hearing and to transfer the prisoner or the petitioner. And he also filed writs of mandamus to try to enforce those orders. None of those slowed the process, and they were all aimed at continuing the process toward completion. So there's no argument.
Did the judge respond when he files these various things? Is there some reaction?
Yes, all of his motions were heard. His motions for Precy were denied because under Trial Rule 53.1 of the Indiana Rules, there's an exception for post-conviction cases. So those were not successful. Finally, after a few motions, I believe at least after one motion to set hearing was not set. Finally, after about 2 years, the court asked the parties to submit affidavits. So they gave Monaghan 60 days to submit affidavits, which he did, and then the state was given another 60 days to submit affidavits after that, which it never did. And then the case has been cold since then. Nothing happened for over 2 years until this last Friday.
The district court keeps saying it was not exhausted. Right?
That he had not exhausted state remedies.
Yeah, well, yeah, right.
And yes.
That seems to be the refrain. Does the district court have some information that there's some reason for that from the court's point of view, the trial court's point of view?
My reading of that case is that they do note that the case had been ongoing at the time of this last decision by the district court for over 3 years. That should be plenty of time given the 17-month standard in Dozy. Caddy. I think that their understanding was that somehow the delay had been justifiable because Monaghan had been making these motions and had been amending his complaint. As I've tried to argue, the amendments were completely insubstantial and were responded to within either 2 or 3 days, and all of the other motions were aimed solely at trying to move the case along. I don't think that is in any way puts the fault of the delay on Monaghan. At any time, the amendments were also spaced out and the motions were spaced out. At any time before those amendments, which again simply reiterated the claims he'd made in the original petition, the case could have set the court could have set the case for hearing, and it never did so.
You may have no way of knowing, or we'd find out. I just wonder if this is characteristic of this judge, or is it something that is unusual or something unique to this case that some reason or other he's not.
I'm not aware of anything that's unusual about this case, and any knowledge I would have of the judge would simply be things I've heard from other lawyers that have worked with him. I don't know if I'd feel comfortable alleging those things myself.
I'll reserve some time.
Yes, I'll reserve some time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Toby.
May it please the Court. This Court should dismiss this appeal because it has no jurisdiction because the District Court did not enter a final judgment when it dismissed Mr. Monaghan's petition without prejudice to exhaust state court remedies. But beyond that, it appears that this case is moot at this point as a state court judgment has now been issued.
Are you familiar with the judge in the St. Joe Superior Court?
I'm aware that he is, Superior Court is a major felony court.
Right.
So,
is he this behind on his post-conviction relief petitions?
I am aware of another case pending in the Southern District that involves a claim that there's been delay in ruling on a, and I believe Judge Magnus Stinson is monitoring that case in the habeas case. But beyond that,
what's going on? Why is this just ignored, or is there really something that you know of, or did know of this judge or this court that is not paying attention?
At most, it would be a speculation. Here you have a petitioner who files, pro se files, a lot of filings in all of his cause numbers. Here, while filing motions in the post-conviction court, he was also filing numbers in his criminal cause appellate court number that had already been decided, filing motions in that cause number, and then also filing motions in the Indiana Supreme Court for writs of mandamus. And so I don't know if it's partly through a flurry of paper that it kind of gets lost as to what exactly is going on and what needs to happen. In addition to that, I don't know if it's a priority issue with this judge who is trying major felonies, murder cases, and you have an individual who's seeking state post-conviction relief that's no longer in custody for a B felony criminal confinement, that perhaps that he's looking at state post-conviction reliefs of people who are still in custody. So I don't know if that bumped it down in the priority list.
How long is it probation, you know?
I believe he ends probation in July of this year.
Ends?
It ends. His probation period ends.
Out.
Wait. He was on probation when he filed this current petition.
Was he on probation or parole?
He was on probation.
So did not get executed time.
He did get executed time. He got
served that and then had
he served that and then was released to he originally received a sentence of 10 years, 6 years executed, 4 years suspended. And so he was serving the probation period, which probation ran concurrent with the suspended time.
So in July, this is all over no matter what?
Yes. I mean, depending on what the...
I mean, what's the... From your point of view, what if you demand this because that the judge should... I really don't know. Is the judge then supposed to go to the merits or the district judge? Or what is the next step if you find that this is just an inordinate delay?
That is an issue as to what effective relief this court can provide, and that's one of the reasons the respondent thinks it's moot, is that in the cases that petitioner cites, most of those cases involve a case that lay dormant. And nothing was happening in the case. And so the petitioner went to federal court and said, look into it. And the federal court went back, looked into it, and the case got going again. And so we don't have cases like this where the delay is no longer happening. And so were he to go back to the district court, he would have options. He could either go forward with his petition as it now stands and argue inordinate delay and that he shouldn't have to exhaust his appellate procedures. And so then we would look at the case as ended at the trial court level, or he could go back and exhaust his appellate procedures and then go back to the district
all this
court.
Is challenging the conviction that he's already served.
Correct.
Not, other than maybe exonerating the record, I just don't see where this goes. But
I would point out
an awfully long time doing nothing. That's all.
I would point out that from when the case was fully briefed before the trial court to when it decided its decision, it was approximately 2 years. I'm not aware of any case that has decided that is an inordinate delay for a judgment, for a judge to take in making a judgment. There are habeas cases in which district courts take longer than 2 years to decide habeas petitions in the federal system routinely. So,
well, a motion and they get a decision in a hurry.
Correct. So the delay here wasn't excessive or inordinate. It doesn't meet either prong.
The Josie case was 17-month delay.
That was a 17-month delay during a direct appeal in which counsel had been appointed, but nothing had happened. So there we're dealing, first of all, we're dealing with direct appeal, which more rights attach and more concern about, obviously, you have a right to a direct appeal and you have a right to due process in a speedy direct appeal, which you don't have in state post-conviction. And there, Dozier v. Caddy didn't say it was an inordinate delay. It just said it warrants an investigation by the district court to find out why nothing is happening on this individual's direct appeal. So it really doesn't say 17 months there was just a trigger for the court to say, we better look into this because we're starting to accrue time that we wouldn't expect time to accrue at that point. You wouldn't expect it to take counsel 17 months to file the opening brief, whereas 2 years for a trial judge to make a decision on a case, while it might be on the high side, the respondent doesn't believe it's excessive. The state would just point the court again to Moore v. Moat and Dallas v. Chambers, which a district court dismissing a petition without prejudice was not found to be a final judgment. And so this court in both those cases found it didn't have jurisdiction to decide the appeal.
We do send it back. Would the district court go to the merits?
If the district court did go to the merits, finding that an excuse for the for petitioner not to exhaust his appellate rights, the state post-conviction court's ruling would still be entitled to 2254D deference because that is the last state court decision on these issues. I would point out that, too, just going briefly to the merits, he challenges ineffective assistance of appellate counsel. Where the respondent's position is he's waived that because he dismissed appellate counsel and proceeded pro se in his state direct appeal. So he can't challenge his own ineffectiveness, and that's the sole claim he raises in his petition here. So even going to the merits, there's not a viable issue there for him to pursue.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Wright, Fishman.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have a few issues to address. First, I'd like to address the question of jurisdiction that was raised. I'd like to note that Dulles v. Chambers and also Moore v. Moot are both cases that do not in any way address the issue of an excuse because of excessive delay. Those are both cases which only deal with plaintiffs, petitioners, one of whom had not gone through any state collateral process. The other had gone through some state collateral process, but neither alleged that they should be excused. So those cases should be distinguished from the case at hand where the primary issue here is that he should be excused because of excessive delay. There's also a more recent case, Sharon Plow v. Schwartz Parma, in which this court held that a dismissal without prejudice that is conclusive in practical effect is certainly appealable. And the dismissal at the district court level, although it was without prejudice, was certainly conclusive in practical effect because he has to go back to the state and continue to suffer through the delay. So we would distinguish those cases and hold that there is, in fact, jurisdiction here. Moving to a second issue, even if he gets out in July, there are still collateral issues attendant to being a convicted felon. And exonerating the record would not be in any way unimportant or ineffectual for him. Third, the state points out that the time should start. A big issue in this case is how exactly we should calculate the delay. We argue that we should start calculating the delay when the state case is filed. That way we get a full sense of the entire length of the delay. And it's also worth mentioning that there's two different issues here. The first is the delay inordinate? That's strictly a matter of time. And as Dozier v. Caddy points out, or establishes, 17 months is enough to make the delay inordinate. Once the delay is decided to be inordinate, then the court needs to look at whether or not the delay has been justifiable. Clearly the delay has been inordinate here. The case was open for almost 4 years. There were two years in itself that where there was no action at all. So for these foregoing reasons, we respectfully ask this court to remand the case to the district court for hearing on the merits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. Thank you, Mr. Palmer. The brief notes that you were a law student when it was filed, but informing the court that you're a graduate, we extend our congratulations to your accomplishment, and thank you for accepting this appeal on behalf of the school, and of course, thanks to you, Mr. Colby. Case taken under advisement.
Are you a third year?
I just finished my third year.
Pardon me?
I just finished my third year. I just graduated about 2.5.